BangTheBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, February 26th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we keep this Bang the Book Radio train going for this week. Two guests join me here on the program today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. He's become a jack of all trades for us here on Bang the Book Radio. So we'll talk NHL, we'll talk the trade deadline, we'll take a look at tonight's card, see if there's any good opportunities out there on the ice. Then we'll do some NASCAR stuff as the Pennzoil 400 coming up here this weekend at Las Vegas. We'll talk about the new rules package, the challenges with that, things of that sort. And then we'll wrap things up with Brian with the Honda Classic at PGA National as the Florida swing gets underway here this week. Second half of today's show, professional handicapper Rolf Michaels will join us. He's over at wagertalk.com, and we'll do some college basketball with him, taking a look at the final week of the regular season in the small conferences, get an update on the big conferences with a couple weeks' worth of regular season games left to go. We'll also answer a listener question from the Monday mailbag, take a look at the futures market, and then finally get Rolf's top situational and technical plays of the week. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Phenomenal work being done by our cast of writers over there. Make sure you check out what we have to offer across the NHL, college basketball, NBA, soccer, tennis, golf, NASCAR, UFC, you name it. We've got it covered over at bangthebook.com. And of course, you know, as we go throughout the week here, I'll be doing some more Major League Baseball stuff, some more college basketball conference tournament stuff. A lot of good things going on over at bangthebook.com in the very near future, so make sure that you check that out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is that promo code, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We start things off with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. Welcome back, bud. How's it going?
That's going well, buddy. Appreciate it. Let's go ahead and start in the NHL. Obviously, yesterday, a very, very busy day, particularly for the Vegas Golden Knights, which we'll talk about here in a minute. But as far as trade deadlines, Brian, what do you think about this one overall?
It's a typical trade deadline. I mean, yesterday morning, you're up early and you're waiting and it's quiet and then it kind of explodes, you know. There are a lot more player-for-player deals. And I think the power teams in the West all addressed needs and got better. And but the big story of the trade deadline is Columbus saying, we're going for this. When there's no guarantee to make the playoffs. Now, they have no excuse now, but keeping Panarin and Bobrovsky, but then going basically getting Duchesne and Zingle and McQuaid. I mean, they added a lot of guys. They better do something. It's your backyard, man. They better do something in the playoffs this year because they got nothing, little in the pipeline and no picks down the road. You tell me. I mean, it's your backyard. I wonder what the message is for the fans. I mean, that's got to say, hey, it's cool they're going for it, but I mean, you always have to weigh the short-term reward for the long-term risk.
Well, I mean, this is one of those situations where, for Columbus, I don't know if choice. I think you have to go for it. I mean, you're not finding a goaltender like Sergei Bobrovsky in free agency all that often. If you do, it's a guy where, you know, you're going to have to pay for some years at the back end of that contract that won't be very good. Panarin's probably the most skilled guy they've had since Rick Nash in his prime. I mean, they haven't won a playoff series in franchise history. You have to go for it one of these years. I think they made the right decision to do it here. I know they mortgaged the future. I know they don't have picks. I know the system is weak. I mean, their AHL team is right here in Cleveland. So, you know, I know what they have to work with that roster. And there's really not a whole lot of NHL potential with that group. So, I mean, they made a conscious decision. And I think that when you've got a goaltender like Bobrovsky, you know, if you can make your way into the playoffs, you're a live dog if you're an underdog. You're a good favorite with a goaltender like that. I think they made the right call, personally.
No, I don't know what the right answer is. I mean, it'll all be weighed out by what will the results be. You know, but as it's constituted today, they got a one-point lead they're in the playoffs by a point. And they're two away from being out. Again, with the additions, when they're 7-3 in their last 10, you got to say, hey, look, I mean, they were a team I've identified as one that would be on the banana peel with the distractions of Panarin and Bobrovsky. And sure enough, they plummeted down to where they're in a perilous position, but then they turn around and go for it. You know, the one thing would be, you sit there and say, if I'm going to do all this stuff, do I honestly think you can win the whole thing? And I give them full marks for going for it, but, you know, it's fun today, Adam, but, you know, talk to me in June.
No, I completely understand. I mean, again, no, you know, you're talking about a franchise that has never won a playoff series, and that was, again, I keep harping back on this point. You know, they're a goalpost away from being up 3-0 on Washington last year, and, you know, probably winning that series, at least you would certainly think so, and maybe things are different here. But, you know, I think that they kind of dwell on that a little bit themselves as well. And, you know, look, I'm an analytics guy across most of the sports. I'm a believer in sample size, a believer in building for the long term. But also, I do wish there were more teams that got proactive and said, you know what, F it, we're going for it. And it's kind of a breath of fresh air. And maybe it blows up in their faces. Maybe it doesn't work for them at all. Maybe they do miss the playoffs. But like you said, I mean, at least there's that. They're going for it. And they sent a loud and clear message to that locker room. Now it's up to those guys to perform.
No, there's no doubt about it. Hey, Vegas did it last year. They kept Neil and Perron, let them walk for nothing, but they made it all the way to game 5 of the finals. So can you get a lot out of it by going for it? Absolutely you can. And then in the West, I mean, they're just lining up to kill each other. It's crazy. I mean, San Jose's all in. There's no doubt about that from day one. If they can get Erik Karlsson healthy, the Jets get Kevin Hayes. Don't sleep on Nashville, what Poyle did. He gets Simmons and Granlund, and he's got a terrific defensive core, a great top line. And if they get good goaltending from Rennie, they're going to be really salty. The Flames have been a great story. And then Vegas goes off the 10-meter platform into the deep end of the pool and walks away with the you know, by a country mile, the guy that was considered to be the best player. And if he was able to pull it off as a sign and trade. And at the end of the day, Erik Brännström's a wonderful prospect. And Ottawa's going to be, I think, thrilled to have this kid. But you know, Vegas makes the big splash. And they were the team with potential that needed a kick in the pants and a wake-up call more than anybody. And that's the kind of player Stone is.
So here's the question then. You know, as you mentioned, a lot of Western Conference teams making additions, the top five, you know, really positioning themselves well here, I think, for that playoff push. Columbus, obviously, you know, some turnover there for them. They've been playing Duchesne on the top line here at first. They've kind of sat Pierre-Luc Dubois, maybe hoping he picks up a second wind here late in the year. How do you approach these teams after they make these additions? I mean, you know, obviously Columbus, a team that, as we talked about already, going for it. How do you view them in the short term? How do you view Vegas with a big splash like a Mark Stone? How do you view Nashville, a team at the core has been together 2 or 3 years. They're now in the Music City, but they're adding pieces that have to acclimate to the lineup. How do you handle this from a betting standpoint, Brian?
It's a great question, and I don't know that there's any great answer. There, you know, some of these guys are just that good. It's an instant upgrade. Some guys will get the 10-day bump from being moved and go bonkers, and then water will find its level. But then there's also the dynamic that you're, you know, 65 games into a season, and a new guy's here. And, you know, the whole point of this is, yeah, get results, but you're also trying to develop chemistry. So there are gray areas, Adam. There's nothing that just, oh, boy, they're automatically better. They got that guy. On paper, they are. But there's still a transition stage for some of these guys and some of these teams.
Now, obviously, the other side of the coin here at the trade deadline, we always focus on the buyers. Let's focus on the sellers here. The Senators, obviously a huge seller. Duchesne, Stone, Zingle. You've got the Rangers were a big seller as well, trading Matt Zuccarello. And, you know, we saw Henrik Lundqvist's interview after that and how emotional he was. Very tough time for these sellers. So do you do with them? I mean, do you think they've thrown in the towel? Do they rally around some of the young players that have an increased role now? What do you think about some of the major sellers here from
The sellers are so dangerous now, Adam, it's not even funny. You know, the teams that are out of it, they're going to have a lot of bad nights, but they're going to have nights where they're out there playing, having fun, and going for it. Guys are playing for jobs. Like Ottawa, they get the prospect Eric Brandstrom. And McPhee would not bring him to Vegas. And this kid, he's a phenomenal player with tons of offensive upside. I think Ottawa's going to circle the wagons on some of these games. Some of these teams, once they're out of it, the pressure's off them, and the other teams are vying for desperately to get a point or get 2 points. And you stub your toe against an Ottawa or Detroit, at the end of the year, that could be the difference between making the playoffs or missing the playoffs. So the pressure actually is on the teams that are in the hunt. And from a betting perspective, they'll need teams winning as plus $2 dogs, I'll tell you that.
One more team I want to touch on here in general, and then we'll take a look at tonight's card and see if there's anything you like. The Dallas Stars, they go out, make a play for Matt Zuccarello, trying to enhance their offense a little bit, and they only have scored 157 goals this year, the third lowest in the Western Conference. They're kind of on the, you know, they're certainly in the playoff race right now, but you kind of wonder how long that's sustainable with they're just not scoring goals. Then Zuccarello breaks his arm, and he's out for several weeks, may not even play here the rest of the regular season. How do you handle a team like that that feels like they're getting some help, and all of a sudden the rug's pulled out from under them?
Yeah, Zuccarello's a really nice player. It was a nice fit for them, and I don't know that that was enough to put him over the top. Then the guy comes in, plays a game, breaks his arm. On top of that, they're playing in Vegas tonight, and now Ben is hurt. I don't know that I trusted Dallas to begin with. I think it may be tough sledding for them the rest of the way. I think the Avs hit the skids. I can see maybe the Avs making a little bit of a push again. The good news for Dallas is, you know, I mean, who are you really scared of? Colorado, Arizona, I guess Vancouver and Chicago, they're in the hunt. I think Chicago expended so much energy to get back in it that maybe they'll flatten out. So Dallas has a legitimate shot. Let's say there are four teams, realistically, maybe I'm discounting Vancouver, but let's say Dallas, Minnesota, Colorado, and even Arizona. Four teams are vying for two spots. Well, Dallas still has a pretty decent chance of getting in. Scares me in any way, shape, or form.
All right, so as we look at tonight's card, you know, we've got a surging Carolina team laying $2.50. We've got Washington laying $3.50 tonight against Ottawa. And we just talked about Ottawa as a team that, you know, pretty much lost everything that they had in terms of proven offensive upside with their forward group. Vegas, a $2 favorite tonight over Dallas. So some big numbers out there on the board, but also some games of significant interest tonight. Calgary and the Islanders, basically a coin flip game. You've got Columbus hosting Pittsburgh tonight. They're a -150 favorite in a really interesting spot. And also San Jose and Boston, with some Boston money coming in here against the Sharks, who are on a pretty interesting road trip. Anything stand out to you about tonight's NHL card, Brian?
Two games I looked at, Adam. I think Calgary and the Islanders, it's an out-of-conference game. We know the Islanders can clog the neutral zone, and they're getting really good goaltending. Tendency at home is to try to do a little bit more. And Calgary likes to play an up-tempo game. I think that could be a fun game tonight. Again, it's an out-of-conference game. You get total six. I can see goals in that game. The one I'll throw at you, and the season's likely over, but this would be the absolute last gasp effort to circle the wagons. They're playing back-to-back nights. I like the Sabres tonight in Philadelphia. They're plus $1.45. They made a really nice trade. They got Brendan Montour from Anaheim, and he made it to Toronto last night but didn't play. So he'll make his debut tonight. So they've got now Montour and Dahlin for the next decade. But they've squandered and frittered away this season. But Philly, Wayne Simmonds is out of there. It's the first game for them without, you know, one of their leaders. And you're getting this plus price because of the back-to-back night. Well, last night in Toronto, honestly, Buffalo was the better team for 55 minutes of that game. They gave up three goals in 2 minutes and 20 seconds, pulled the goalie. Omar came in, and they were right there. They ended up losing 5-3, but they had a chance to tie the game in the last second, and Toronto got the empty netter. But they played really hard last night. And generally, you're old back-to-back nights. It's a nothing trip from Toronto to Philly. Montour makes his debut. I like the Sabres tonight.
Well, of course, for Philadelphia here, Carhartt's still on the shelf as well. So they're missing their best. Interesting note that Buffalo and Toronto play each other again on Saturday night. So I'll be curious to see how that price is adjusted. You know, Toronto wins 5-3. Looks like they had a pretty good game there as a minus 230, minus 240 favorite. What does that price look like on Saturday? That'll be something that you want to keep an eye out for over the weekend. So, and let's transition.
And real quick, to wrap up the Buffalo-Philly game, it's all about Buffalo. There's a lot of things pointing to Buffalo. It's the thing that Simmons is not playing. The other thing I would throw at you, and I guess you can make the same case for Pittsburgh, although I think Pittsburgh's mad playing Columbus tonight, but Columbus will have a bounce in their step with all the new acquisitions. But I think it's a letdown spot for Philly, too, as they had this remarkable comeback, scored two goals with the goalie pulled and one in overtime in the outdoor game in front of 70,000 fans. Now, I think it's a huge letdown spot for Philly, too.
That's a very good angle. Definitely something you want to consider, you know, from an NHL standpoint here tonight. All right, let's talk NASCAR for a couple of minutes, Brian. And as far as I know, nobody's posted odds yet for this race. If I'm wrong, you can certainly correct me there, because I do know that this race is out there in Las Vegas. In fact, I am seeing odds over at Five Dimes. So
yeah,
Kevin Harvick.
I got him if you need him.
Okay, Kevin Harvick, about a 5-1 favorite here in this one. Kyle Busch, plus 550. Truex, Larson, Keselowski in the plus 660, 7-1 range. Logano, about 9-1 there for this race in Vegas this weekend. We'll have my preview up over at bangthebook.com here this afternoon. I imagine Brian will do a video for us on our Bang the Book YouTube page as well. But a lot of talk of this new rules package, Brian, and some uncertainty that comes along with that. Why don't you fill us in on that?
Well, they had a modified set of new rules last week in Atlanta, but the aerodynamics package actually kicks in this week in Vegas. It brings the horsepower down. I'm no motorhead. It brings the horsepower down from 750 to 550, and the premise is it's going to make for more pack racing. Vegas, in the mile-and-a-half tracks, a lot of time, it's like a parade through town. The one thing that happens is, and likely still will happen, is the car that gets the lead will be able to pull away, and then there'll be a lot more bunched racing in the back of the pack. So it's going to come down to restarts, track position, pit stops, as it always does. That being said, a lot of these teams tested in Vegas before the Atlanta race, and the guys that tested well in Vegas, the Penske team tested really well. Ryan Blaney, I had Ryan Blaney last week, and basically he had the race won. It's a NASCAR race, and these things happen. He comes in the pit, and two guys that weren't even involved in the race had an accident right in front of him in the pit. Well, he's in the pit. It cost him the race. So I think Blaney comes right back with an opportunity. Jimmy Johnson's done well in Vegas at a balloon price of 40-1. The one thing I would say to you, Harvick, the same cast of characters, right? Harvick, Busch, Truex, Larson, Keselowski are the favorites, but this is the first race with this aerodynamic package. I always say Daytona, Talladega with restrictor plate racing and the big accident. Those are the races where a big price can win. You know Harvick's going to win in Phoenix, right? But I would say that there are gray areas with this new aerodynamic package this week that, you know, one of the big boys or a couple of the big boys could struggle with this, and somebody from in the 20-1 range could be markedly better. So I would think there would be an opportunity now, before anybody knows anything about this aerodynamics package, to take a shot with a mid-range price play. So I'd be looking at guys like Blaney, Amarillo, and Johnson at double-digit numbers.
Well, and that's the thing about NASCAR. I mean, obviously, you know, they're working this constant struggle to keep fan engagement. And, you know, obviously the Xfinity Series doesn't really do a whole lot for them. And, of course, you know, over the last 2 years, they've been capping how many Cup Series guys can be in those. They've been capping the number of Cup Series participations allowed throughout the year. And you know, you look at the last couple of years in NASCAR, and it's been so top-heavy, so dominated by the Joe Gibbs team or Harvick and the Penske team, you know, or Stuart Haas Racing. It's been a certain number of teams that are winning the vast majority of these races. So do you feel like this year we do get more of a spread with, you know, we won't see a guy win six or seven races this year like we have seen in recent years?
I know that would like to be their goal, but probably not. You know, the reality of it is they're all great drivers. It's who's got the fastest car that week. Well, what happens? You get Hendrick Motorsports or the Hendrick engines. You know, the teams with a boatload of dough can afford the best engines on any given week. You know, it's almost like March Madness. Say, well, how many teams can cut down the nets? Well, you're probably looking at, you know, 10 to a dozen. That's kind of like NASCAR. I mean, how many true contenders are there on the majority of NASCAR races? You know, probably 10 to a dozen. And the rest of them are just going around in circles out there.
Well, like I said, I'll have a preview up for the Pennzoil 400 here this today, and then also the Boyd Gaming 300 is the Xfinity Series race this week. So I'll have those two previews up over at bangthebook.com. And like I said, look for Brian's video for the Pennzoil 400 over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. So, Brian, one more item of business here on what's become, like I said, you're kind of a jack of all trades for us here, kind of a grab bag segment, betting the board segments on Tuesday mornings. The Honda Classic down at PGA National. The Florida Swing gets underway, four straight Florida events. And, you know, quite frankly, this is not a very good field here at all. So I had a very hard time handicapping this tournament. How about you?
Well, what I would say to you is I think this week could be the week that produces a ridiculous winner at a ridiculous price. You know, you had the California circuit. And then they went to the WGC event in Mexico. Some of the guys went to Puerto Rico. But now you get the Florida Swing. Now all of a sudden you change grass. And then there's horses for courses. There are a boatload of guys that live within 30 miles of this course. So guys that are familiar with the course can step up and make some noise. Thomas is 5-1 defending champ, playing great. You know, Fowler, Koepka, Garcia, Wood, or Scott, and Woodland. I had Webb Simpson last week, and he played awful in Mexico. 20-1, I think Webb Simpson is going to have a big year, but last week, current form was no good. A guy I thought I would be looking for, and sure enough, he's on here, and it's nothing more than a horse for course, and he's not been playing good at all, is Daniel Berger. So he shows up at 30-1. I'm like, well, you know, Berger was, I thought, maybe I could sneak one in here. Well, the odds makers are all over that, and we don't know enough about him the way he's playing right now, but it wouldn't shock you if Berger's in contention. But I would say this to you. I think Matt Wallace getting acclimated on in North American soil. This is a guy who won three times on the European Tour, 60-1. I'm going to be taking a look at him. I think Taylor Gooch at 100-1 is a guy. CT Pan is another kid that every blue moon steps up. He ends up on a lot of leaderboards. On the way in, I'm swinging for the fences and Sung J.M. at 60-1. I'm going to probably start off with those four guys and balloon numbers at them and see where it leads. But I just think the switch from California to Florida could produce some wacko results.
Yeah, and, you know, we don't have a great field here this week, as I mentioned. A lot of guys taking the week off with the cross-country trip. You've got the Arnold Palmer next week. A lot of guys do like to play that event for, you know, sentimental reasons to honor Arnie, of course, and, you know, because it is a pretty good tournament. Then you've got the players coming up as well. So guys looking to take a little bit of a blow this week. This is a brutal course, though, too. I think some guys just feel like this course isn't worth the frustration. I mean, the top winning score here, 13 under. We had a couple of 12 unders, but a lot of single-digit winners here. It's a really, really rough track, and, you know, that makes it tough because we don't have the world-class players that you would expect to conquer a course like this.
Well, and you know what? And you're right. And actually, which leads me to another guy that I now will have to throw in the pile here. And again, like, so if you got five guys and they're 50-1 or higher, if you hit the thing, your return is going to be in the 10-12-1 range. Last year, only Shinnecock Hills in the U.S. Open played tougher than this course. And you're right. I mean, this par is a good score here. So maybe you look at guys that can contend in majors. You know, I mean, that would certainly maybe point you at a guy like Koepka. Parr is a good scorer. Koepka is kind of a U.S. Open specialist. You know, if Parr is a good scorer and, you know, middle of greens and just hang around and survive, that's kind of Zach Johnson's game, isn't it? I mean, you know, the bear traps, 15, 16, and 17, can take down the best of them, and you can put up a balloon number, but you're right. You're looking for guys that hit fairways, middle of greens, and the difference ultimately would be who's the guy that's got the flat stick rolling here. But I would look at guys that are, you know, consistent and are patient. Where Parr is a good scorer, don't panic. You know, if some guy could go out and be six or seven under on the first day, don't feel like you got to chase that guy immediately, because this is the kind of course where that guy can come back to the pack.
Yeah, and that's something I picked up on here, too. I do like the Zach Johnson idea. I mean, Zach Johnson is a guy from the Southeast. He tends to play well in a lot of these Southeastern U.S. events. I think that's a pretty good one to look at there. Luke List is a guy that I mentioned in my write-up over at bangthebook.com, because he was runner-up last year, tied for 52nd in 2017, but he finished with a 76. So he was playing pretty well, then went six over in his final round, fell down the board, 10th in 2016, but that was something I picked up on in my handicap of this event, Brian, is that a lot of times you do get the horse for course guys, guys that have rattled off three or four straight top 15s or top 20s. But this course is just such a pain in the ass that you don't have a lot of consistent players here. So this is an event where I do recommend either take the big shots or go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. That's where Daniel Berger pops up. Right. I mean, Daniel Burton, he's been cast for the friendly ghost. But you know, when they get down here, Daniel Berger ends up on the leaderboard. It happens. The other guy, remember Lumpy Heron?
No, name doesn't ring
Tim
a bell
Heron,
there.
Big, a heavy set guy. He's still out there slapping it around. He's just out there making a living. But when they get to the Honda Classic and they get to the South Florida swing, Lumpy Heron would always end up on the leaderboard. They're guys that just, the course suits their eye.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the tougher events, one of the more challenging golf handicaps of the year. We should have a lot more to talk about next week with the Arnold Palmer, an event that has an invitational field. So it's kind of a who's who type of event on, of course, sort of the lead into the players there as well. Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Tell us how people can listen to those shows, Brian.
Good stuff, Adam. Thanks. Appreciate it. Noon to 2, KSHP.com, noon to 2 Pacific time. You can follow me on Twitter at Brian Blessing. The shows are archived at sportsbookradio.com. In fact, today we're going to hear from Mark Stone. He's going to be introduced to everybody here in Vegas today. George McPhee talked about the trade deadline on Vegas Hockey Hotline. Bill Foley, the Golden Knights owner, is going to join me in studio for an hour. And he's a breath of fresh air. He gets up there and he says what he thinks, and he doesn't care. He's great. So we'll have a good show today, 1 Pacific, with Bill Foley in studio. And as you mentioned, we're going to get some videos up. We'll certainly be taking care of the golf and NASCAR, and we'll get you an updated Stanley Cup futures report and follow up on post-trade deadline. Adam? People, who do you like? Who do you like to win the cup? And I'm like, well, talk to me February 26th. Well, it's February 26th. I mean, now you know who the players are. You actually know who's going to be on these teams now. And did anybody really themselves as a result of the trade deadline? So we'll get a video for you up at bangthebook.com.
Lots of stuff to look forward to for sure. Again, make sure that you subscribe to our Bang the Book YouTube channel for my videos as well as videos from Brian Blessing, at Brian Blessing on Twitter, Sportsbook Radio, and Vegas Hockey Hotline, the two programs. Brian, appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much, sir, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Glad you're feeling better, pal.
Thank you so much. There's Brian Blessing again, at Brian Blessing on Twitter, Vegas Hockey Hotline, and Sportsbook Radio, the two shows there on KSHP. We got one more guest here for this Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
I will echo Brian's sentiments. Glad you're feeling better. It certainly sounds like you are, and sorry we missed last week. Happy to be on and return the show to normalcy.
Happy to be back, man. Thank you so much for the well wishes and for reaching out there as well. And let's go ahead and talk some college basketball here, Rolf, because March is approaching quickly. Friday, the first day of March here, thankfully, because I'm ready for spring more than I've ever been. But that also means conference tournaments, means March Madness, also means the end of the regular season. So with that in mind, a lot of small conference tournaments starting next week. I think the Atlantic Sun is the first one next Monday. Then you get the Big South and a couple others on Tuesday. What does this week mean for you from a betting standpoint in some of those smaller conferences, Rolf?
Well, you know, you have to remember the difference is those smaller conferences are playing for basically their lives. Their March Madness tournament has started today. And, you know, I just tweeted out, Adam, I'll email it to you. I just did an Excel sheet which shows you all the conference tournaments. And I remember, I mean, obviously being from Cleveland, we followed the Horizon League closely with Cleveland State. The Horizon was one of those conferences that gave a definite edge to the top two seeds. They basically had a double bye. Well, I just tweeted out this conference tournament schedule for all 32 conferences, and there are quite a few teams, quite a few conferences this year, which have extended tournaments. Example, the Atlantic Sun plays Monday the 4th, Thursday the 7th, and Sunday the 10th. So you don't have back-to-back games. The better teams can rest their players, and I think it's an edge. Now, that's because the home team gets an edge. Another, the Patriot. Patriot has games Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday. The better teams can rest their players. You're not playing back-to-back games. Injuries don't take as much of effect. The Big South plays Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday. Again, days off between those games. The Northeast, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday. So they're giving the home edge to these teams that are finishing one or two in the seedings. So when you're looking at the standings now, it's very important to know who gets those byes, what the teams are playing for now. And again, they're basically playing for those lives, trying to get the top seeds. Now, that doesn't always necessitate value, because a lot of times the team that is in a must-win situation has added pressure and won't cover a big spread. But when you get those evenly matched teams, teams that aren't laying double digits, those are the teams that I try to focus on, that their goal is to win the game. Winning a game is much different than covering a game as a double-digit spread. So if I can find those situations of a better team in a situation that would really improve themselves, where you're not laying an inflated number, the value's few and far in between, but you certainly can pick and choose some of those spots.
Yeah, it's a really important thing to look at the standings and the advantages, as you mentioned, for the conference tournaments, you know, because a lot of those early games in those very small conference tournaments, you've got to go play on the road. You look at the Horizon League, for example, you know, those Tuesday, Wednesday games next week, those are conference tournament games on the road. And then for Monday, Tuesday, you go to Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, and then you wind up playing at a neutral site. So, you know, there are a lot of advantages to these small conference tournaments, and deservedly so, because if you're a small conference, you absolutely want to do everything in your power to get your best team into the tournament to make your conference look as good as possible. So those are very important things. And also, too, in some of these small conference tournaments, not everybody makes the field. Sometimes they cut off the bottom two or the bottom four teams or something. So you've got jockeying for position just to get into the conference tournament as well.
And again, I'm just going to give a plug now for the College Basketball Guide, because it's something I do and it's updated every Monday. And I look at those standings. You have to look where those teams are in the standings. Yes, you may see an overall record if you're handicapping a game, but the conference standings are the most important thing at this time, because you're not basing your seedings on a year-to-date record. You're basing it on conference-only play. So, again, it's I'm going to emphasize it. We'll emphasize it again next week. But, you know, even more so this week, because here you have the one-and-dones playing next week in the conference tournaments. You know, of the conference tournaments, of the 32 conferences, about 13 or 14 are next week. and then about 18 are the following week. So, you know, you're going to have those situations where you have those teams. Now, the big difference is, we'll talk about this probably more next week, if you're in the ACC or you're in the Big Ten and you got some guys mixed up and you're playing your last two regular season games and you're going to be a 2 or a 3 seed anyway, it really doesn't matter. Rest is so much more important than adding extra effort to try to win a couple games, which could help you get from a 4 seed to a 3 seed. That means nothing in the long run. The rest is more important. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about it where you've seen teams in the ACC or Big Ten not give their full effort on Fridays and Saturdays because they don't want to play 4 games in 4 days and have to turn around and play Thursday, you know, or Friday. They know they're a 1 or a 2 seed. Those championships are so much different. So, you know, the thing with conference tournaments are, it's two different bodies of work, the non-power conferences and the power conferences, and how you handicap them are completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many considerations here across a variety of different things. And, you know, again, this is a situation where you also want to, if you've got the time, try to look at tiebreakers. And I was sort of trying to look at one here in the Atlantic Sun as you were talking, because Stetson and Kennesaw State, now, only 8 teams make the conference tournament here in the Atlantic Sun. So, you know, you've got a situation where North Alabama is a transitional member to the Atlantic Sun. So, correct me if I'm wrong, and I haven't looked at this, and this is something I probably should have checked before I came onto the show, but I think these transitional members cannot participate in the conference tournament. North Alabama is that team. So, while Stetson and Kennesaw State play each other on Friday, it looks like it's a game to get into the conference tournament, but I don't think North Alabama can play in it because they're a transitional member. So a lot of little intricacies here that do take time to look up, but if you find these angles, you can definitely cash some tickets that way.
Yeah, and again, you know, the thing to remember is with pressure, with must wins, if you're laying double digits, that's usually a situation I am looking to stay away from. So cashing those tickets are, you know, when you're a short favorite on the road, you know, or you may be a shorter favorite at home because the team's been hot, but don't necessitate must wins with having to cover double digit favorites.
All right, so as we look at the conference tournaments for next week, the A-Sun, Patriot, Big South, Northeast, Ohio Valley, Missouri Valley, MAAC, West Coast, SoCon, America East, Colonial, and the Summit League. So a lot of the low and mid, like fringe mid-major types of conferences, which means that the major conferences, the quote-unquote Power Six conferences in college basketball, they still have 2 full weeks of regular season games left to go. So how are you approaching those teams right now, Rolf?
You know, it is just hit or miss and looking at what the teams need. You know, a lot of the conferences do schedule the rivalries, and that's a big deal. I mean, you know, we all saw Michigan State on Saturday. Well, you know, did a loss hurt Michigan? Well, it might have hurt them from a 1 seed, but, you know, it's not going to affect them in the long run. But when you get these quick turnaround rematches, that's what excites me so much. You have a couple situations here where these top rivals are now playing each other in the last 2 weeks of the season with this extra late February, early March intensity. So I do look at situations where you can get quick revenge, or you look at teams with outliers. You know, I was hanging out with Brian and Brad. We were watching the Michigan State game at a sports bar in Vegas on Sunday, and we all commented Michigan State, I think, shot 56% for the first half. Well, even at home, I'm going to say Michigan State is not going to shoot 56% against in the rematch against Michigan. So, you know, you look for those outliers in those first games, see where a team overachieved or underachieved. And again, a lot of times in those rematches, you'll return to normalcy where they'll shoot closer to those normal numbers. Outliers is just a normal part of handicapping. But in the rivalry games, those outliers even mean more to me.
Now, I know that you like to do a lot from a situational standpoint, and I do as well. And in fact, over on our YouTube page today, in my Tuesday 3-pack, one of my favorite plays on the card tonight Texas A&M getting 12 against LSU. LSU's last seven games decided by five or fewer points.
Yeah, I faded. I did not play against them, but I faded LSU in my mind in that last game against Tennessee. You know, LSU went from a team that was middle of the road SEC, wasn't going to make the tournament, to now all of a sudden having a chance to win the SEC. So when you go from being that team that can catch some teams in surprise, like I believe they caught Kentucky, now you have a bullseye on your back. And what's happened back-to-back games? Well, I'll tell you what. The overtime game against Florida, where they lost, then an overtime game against Tennessee. You have back-to-back overtime games, and now you're playing an A&M team that you should beat. You have expectations. You have pressure off two close games. And, again, you have a team that has a much better offense than a defense, and those are the teams I don't want to lay double digits with.
Well, and that's the thing. I think at this time of the year, with this being, you know, the dog days of the season, with teams getting tired, especially if you're a team like an LSU that, you know, as we just mentioned, a lot of close games, playing at probably a higher level than anticipated, that pressure winds up being a lot. So do you find that you rely even more on situational angles this deep into the regular season?
Oh, very much so. I'm always looking to find teams off wins and off losses. You know, we'll talk about a couple of those with situational plays coming up. But absolutely, when you have a quality team that's off a bad loss late in the year and is going to bounce back, I expect that bounce back. Teams, I love looking for teams that are above 500 off a loss against a team that's below 500 off a win, another situational spot. The thing to be careful is, you know, I'm talking about a team that's had one win after multiple losses, not a team that may have had strung two or three or four wins together and is on a run. You know, there's teams that have just played better, teams that, you know, I thought might have quit. You know, Penn State's an example. When Penn State lost all those close games early and they lost to Purdue in overtime and didn't cover, you know, you have an eighth-year head coach. You've never been to the tournament. I expected him to quit. Boom, Penn State puts on a run, wins a couple games, covers a lot of games, plays great defense. So, you know, that's one situation where I was wrong. I thought I might look to fade Penn State. But you get burned once, you got to look at them. You get burned twice, you start being very careful. And then in reality, my mind actually completely flipped from a team I thought I was going to fade to a team now I don't mind backing, because the quit in them just did not come. And in fact, they've rallied and have just played incredible defense. So even when you're handicapping this year in and year out, you get to February and you have a mindset, you still can't be afraid to change their mindset. There's plenty of time to turn it around and play on a team you thought you had faded for value.
You know, and I think as we look at tonight's card, there are some pretty interesting things to it. I mean, along with being sick last week and then now being balls deep in baseball, trying to get everything caught up there with that, you know, I haven't been paying as much attention to college basketball as I usually do here at this time of the year. And I imagine a lot of people kind of fall into that trap at this time of the year because there's a lot to keep in mind with college basketball. And, you know, you've got a lot of people are probably tired of the winter and all that type of thing, but you look up and down the card here, and this is something I think I'm very good at, you know, spending as much time as I can on college basketball, but having a feel for the market, just sort of being able to look at a game and say, well, that line catches my eye. Something like a Syracuse in North Carolina tonight, you know, Syracuse playing a lot of tough games. They have been pretty inconsistent overall, but then all of a sudden you see them, a defense first team that plays a zone late, you know, getting 12, 12 and a half points. That's a line that stands out to me. Duke and Virginia Tech, as well as Duke has played this year, only laying 3.5 against Virginia Tech. You've got these games on a daily basis, Wisconsin and Indiana. All anyone's talked about all year is Indiana's a mess. Archie Miller is not doing what we all thought he would do. They take money today against Wisconsin. So, for those that maybe don't have the time to dedicate to college basketball, like I have been here over the last week and a half, looking for these context clues, looking for these games that stand out as a way to narrow down the card, I think is a great resource at this time of the year.
You know, I'll tell you what, I am still old school, and I'll just go to a site that, you know, I don't use besides lines, but I go to scoresandodds.com, and it shows you quickly where the line moves are, and it shows you the records. And I still, no matter how much I follow college basketball, still do the guide, think I know it pretty well. I still look at what the team's records are and where those lines are. And it's amazing the variance. You know, there were some teams, a 10-win team was a 3-point favorite against a 17-win team on Saturday, you know, because of the way they're playing. So even when I look at records and lines, I still do that first. I go through the entire card. I look at it, and I look what jumps out at me, because you don't want to miss games. Sometimes, you know, you start handicapping, you think, oh, I love this game, I love this game, I love this game. And you have three or four games, and you start thinking in your head, well, I don't want to play all these games. And, you know, have you ever stopped handicapping a card, not getting through the end because you have so many games and you don't want to use more? Well, you know, I have. And you know, that's the worst thing in the world, because, you know, if you don't look at those last couple games as closely as you do those first, you may really be missing value. So, you know, I go through the card game by game before I make any opinions, write down my notes on the first perception of the card. Obviously, the night before, I'm going through and I'm making my line, and then I look where the lines are different. So I agree with you. You have to evaluate each day separately, but take a fresh look each day at these teams. What did they do? What have they been off? What's their record? What's their recent record? And then start delving into the games you like from there.
And this isn't necessarily me advocating cutting corners or anything like that. I mean, obviously you want to do your due diligence as much as you possibly can, but I also understand that a lot of our listeners out there probably are pressed for time. And right now with me playing catch up, I am pressed for time. So I'm looking for things on the college basketball card that stand out to me without having to dig deep into the, you know what, there's probably 40 or 45 games on the card tonight. And you get these things like game 6, 17, 6, 18, Toledo and Ball State. Just as you mentioned, a Toledo team, 21-6, you know, a Toledo team that's been one of the better teams in the MAC here this year. Toledo team that, you know, played tight with Buffalo just a couple of weeks ago. A Ball State team that's 14-13, and the line's moving in Ball State's favor. And that's not to say that you want to blindly play Ball State as a result, but simply to say that, you know, you can do some things to really maximize the time you do have to handicap college basketball just by looking for little signs like that.
Yeah, and no, I agree. You know, and you look at Toledo, and the first thing you have to look at is there are some teams that just flat out cannot win road games. And, you know, so you look, is Toledo one of those games? Well, no. Toledo is 9-4 straight up on the road, 8-5 against the spread. So, you know, I understand in certain situations where you have a team with a better record that can't win on the road, that is a small favorite or a small dog, Toledo's not one of them. Toledo's off a couple losses, and were they bad losses? Hell no. They lost to Buffalo at home, and then they lost to Eastern Michigan on a game. You know, Eastern Michigan shot almost 50%. So it's one of the games I had in my mix today, and it didn't make my final card, but that's exactly – I agree with you. Those are the exact situations I look for first, just to make sure nothing completely obvious misses. And again, Vegas isn't putting a number where the power rating should be. Vegas is putting a number where they're getting equal money on both sides. So, you know, they may have had Ball State followers, or they may have had people back off Toledo. We don't know all those situations. So finding those little bits and then studying from there is exactly what you have to do.
So here's a question for you, Rolf. Like we said, you know, conference tournaments start next Monday, and you've got 32 conference tournaments over the span of 2 weeks. Then you've got March Madness, and you've also got the NIT, CBI, CIT, which there are much better betting opportunities in the NIT, CBI, and CIT than there are in the NCAA tournament. But it's that last big push. And we've got some teams out here that are trying to catch that second wind, trying to sort of, you know, position themselves for the postseason. As a handicapper, do you find that you sort of put yourself into that situation as well, where, you know, maybe you do try to avoid burnout, or maybe you try to do things a little bit differently for that last big push?
I started handicapping college basketball, so my burnout doesn't happen in March Madness. I am thrilled when we get to this point. I am energized by doing the conference tournament schedules and looking at that because, you know, once you get to March Madness, let's face it, you know, you have 65 games and half of them are over the first 2 days. You know, I totally agree with you. There's more value in the NIT than the other three tournaments combined. Why? Because you have teams that thought they should have made the NCAA tournament and didn't, or teams that just don't care to be there. The other tournaments, you have less motivational issues because if you're in the CBI or the CIT, you weren't going to make the NCAAs. But, you know, you might have made the NITs, but is that enough motivation? It's not nearly the same motivation. So to me, when it gets to this point, I have no burnout. There are times when I get to the end of the NBA playoffs that I have burnout. I will admit to that. But, you know, the way the NBA schedule goes nowadays, you have one game every 5 days, it seems like, in the finals. So, you know, you can get through that without struggling. But I almost get re-energized at this point. Just because it's my passion, it's how I got into handicapping, and it's what I love doing the most.
Well, and I think it's important to talk about those things too, along with talking about games and tournaments and things that we are going to break down here. But, you know, the mechanics of handicapping, the emotional side, the physical side, the mental side, all very important. And that's sort of a good transition into touching on a listener question that I answered yesterday in the Monday mailbag. I want to get your thoughts on it here, Rolf. From at Tim Boeheim on Twitter, asking if bankroll management changes based on sports. Are there higher variance sports where a unit is a smaller percentage of bankroll and vice versa? So I wanted to get your thoughts on that before we take a look at your situational and technical plays here, Rolf. Do you have a different bankroll or a different financial structure based on the sport?
I don't. And, you know, the reason is, you know, when you cross over, most of my customers are with me for 12 months. I mean, they're football and they're basketball customers, and I do a little baseball. They get that as well. But in football and basketball, you know, you do have those two or three crossover Saturdays where you are using an exorbitant amount of games and you could get your bankroll in trouble. But I'm not going to adjust an entire season just for those two Saturdays. You know, during a week of football, I may have 10 or 12 plays. During a week of college basketball, I may have 18 plays. So, you know, yes, there's a few more, but to me, I pride myself on, in football and in college basketball, I have my set amount of plays that I handicap and I put at a certain star rating. I've had two NBA plays this entire season because if I use an NBA play that's a three-star release, I have to bet the same amount on it. Not that I have to, but I personally would have to like that game as much to bet the same amount as I would a three-star college basketball play, or I'm not going to release it to my customers. I'm just not throwing up NBA plays on Monday to try to get sales because there was only five major college games and I didn't like anyone. I passed. If there's not value where this game is equal to the star rating, be it a three-star in college football, be it a three-star in college basketball, you know, and then I'm going to just take that step one game further. You know, let's talk Monday Night Football or games that you have to bet because they're there. To me, if that Monday Night Football game with that line would not have been a play on Sunday as one of my top three or four plays, I'm not going to release a Monday Night Football game. I had two Monday Night Football games this entire year, 17 weeks of action. If it's not a value on the biggest day of the card, if a Monday game wouldn't have been a play on Saturday when there's 150 games, it's not worthy of being a play on Monday. So I don't force a lot of action. When I do have the crossover sports, those plays have to be as strong as a full college basketball Saturday card for me to use it, or else I just pass and don't use it. So with that volume said, I keep my bankroll the same because I think I do a good job of being very select in games that actually become plays.
Yeah, that's an important point of the or an important part of the equation as well. And that's something I didn't touch on yesterday. But, you know, that's another thing, too, is that, you know, maybe you can keep your unit size the same. But if you've got a different confidence level across different sports markets and different sports leagues, then you do want to be a little bit more hesitant. And I know that that's not easy for people because, you know, the vast majority of our listeners, they want action. You know, they want to do this as a hobby. You're doing this for a living. So it is a different type of mindset, to say the least. But at the same time, you know, like you said, your confidence level, if it's a weaker sport for you, like the NBA, or maybe you're somebody who's a little bit weaker in the NHL, or somebody who's weaker in college football or college basketball, you need to have a higher confidence level to isolate that as the same size play. And if you don't, either play it for less or don't play it at all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the key. I think the plays that people force is really the downfall to most people. And people that want action, yes. And you know what? When we get down to the Final Four, I'm going to put an opinion out on the Final Four games if I don't have a selection, because I understand people want to play them. But in the same mindset, you know, if you're playing a three-star for three units, you shouldn't be playing anywhere near maybe a star to have fun and watch the game. And again, those are different scenarios. We're not talking about, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday during a regular week. We're talking about an event. The Super Bowl is an event. You bet three units on the Super Bowl. Who's going to argue with you? You know, I passed the Super Bowl, but I understand people betting that. When we get to the Final Four national championships, if you're going to bet three units on a game, I have no problems. Even if I just gave out the lowest opinion I have, because it's an event, it's not getting caught up in making every big Monday an event or every Tuesday game on ESPN an event. Those aren't events. Those are part of your normal grind.
Well, and just to tie this off, I mean, that's probably one of the primary reasons how you're able to avoid burnout, you know, because you're not sticking your neck out there playing a game for playing a game's sake, or, you know, making these NBA plays. Like you said, you've released two NBA plays because you know you're better in college basketball and you don't have that confidence level in the NBA. A lot of people get burned out in this business because they're constantly chasing games. And maybe they have a good win rate with them, but they're constantly stressing over games that, you know, maybe they didn't feel as strongly about and yet played the same bet size anyway. So it's part of the learning curve. It's part of the maturation process as a bettor and a handicapper. And I think that's why, you know, you are able to avoid burnout, because you don't make those higher risk gamble types of investments.
You know, to me, if you were interviewing a handicapper that you wanted to purchase for any period of time, you know, my questions to him would be, how many times were there 15 games on the card and you passed? How many Monday night football plays did you have? And how many days in a week do you not have plays because there's no value? And, you know, unfortunately, very few handicappers are going to have the wrong answers to that. Well, I've had to play almost every night game because people want plays. I don't want to pass because my customers want plays. Well, if you're dictating to your customers instead of handicapping the way you truly believe you should handicap, that's where I think a lot of cappers get into issues. And, you know, I think those are the wrong cappers to be associated with.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too. I mean, like you said, you know, well, why are you doing this? Are you doing this for the action? Are you doing this to make money? And you have to have those well-defined boundaries. And I think, personally, if you're doing this to make money, I like the idea of having a different bankroll based on the sport, just so that you can maximize your investments in the sports that you feel are better in. But again, that may not be a strategy that works for everybody. And that's the nice thing about this business here, is that there are a lot of ways to make money. You just have to figure out what it is that makes money the best for you. And Rolf, I know that's something that does very well for you, taking a look at situational and technical plays each week. So what do you got for us on the situational side?
Hey, Adam, if we have 5 minutes, there's some things that I was going to go over last week, but we didn't do the show. They may be a little dated, but it's just four systems that I came up with that I'd like to share, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Go for it, sir.
This first one is, it hasn't occurred much, but since 2015, so we got the last few seasons, teams with 20 or more wins and six or less losses as a home dog. Quality team, 20-plus win team, only six losses. You're one of the top teams in the conference. Those teams 1-9 straight up. 1-8-1 against the spread, 8-2 over under. Now let me preface these. These were current as of last Tuesday. So there may have been one more game in the mix that I'm missing, and I apologize. So these are a week old, but it's the thought putting into them when you're handicapping them. A couple of those situations that did lose, Virginia Tech against Virginia and Toledo against Buffalo. This one's common sense, and we talk about it all the time, but when people hear numbers, they tend to look at it differently. Double-digit favorites with an over-under of 126 or less. You know, you have a defensive game, and you're getting double-digit points. Does it work out? Well, those double-digit favorites with that low total, 13-1 straight up, but only 1-12-1 against the spread. And they also went 11-2 to the over. You know, Virginia, 0-4 in that role this year, again, last week. Does it make sense? Absolutely. Big favorite, low total. And since you are a double-digit favorite, with the over-unders going 11-2-1, you probably have a situation where a team gets out to a big lead, doesn't have that same intensity in defense, or a team is behind and starts fouling early to try to get caught up. So an instance there. How about this? This is teams since 2014, teams that are off a straight-up loss as a favorite, a home favorite of 11-plus. So you have a team that's been embarrassed, and since 2014, the team is 51% the next game, 163, 156, and 5. Nothing to take hold of. But in February, when you have a team that is off a straight-up loss as an 11-plus point double-digit favorite, you're only 23-38. So quite a bit difference later in the year when you have that must win, you're off a loss, you have pressure, you're playing a conference opponent that knows you well, you're only 23-38 in February, 38% in that same situation. And lastly, since 2014, teams that have a win percentage under 50% in February and are a home favorite of 12 or more. So you have a losing team, big home favorite. Obviously, you're playing a very weak opponent. Well, you're 21-17 against the spread, but you're 30-8 over under, 79%. 30 overs, only 8 unders. If in February you're a losing team and you're a big home favorite of 12 or more. And then last one I just found this morning, this number is current as of today. If you are exactly 500, there's no one on the board today, I did look. If you're a small home favorite of up to -4, and you are exactly 50%, and you are off a win. So, scenario, you were one game under 500 last game. You won that game. You have some momentum. Now you're at 500. It's February, late in the year. You only got a handful of games left. You're at home, and you're a small home favorite, 28-13 since 2012, 68%. And that's 500 is a big motivation, something we didn't talk about. When you get to February late in the year, if you're at 500, one game under 500, one game over 500, having that winning record in the school archives for the rest of your life is a big deal.
Yeah, and not to go too long on this, because we can do it next week as well and talk about this point, but not just the 500 angle, but also, you've mentioned this before, round numbers, getting that 20th win, a 25th win, something like that, pretty big motivator for a team as well. And I know you've had a lot of success with those angles in the past.
Absolutely. Talking about tonight, we talked about the LSU game. Technically, A&M 10-4-1 over under on the road, LSU 8-0 over under at home. Technical play for tonight is the totals play on that LSU team with a very good offense, a lot of young kids that don't play shutdown defense. I have that game over the total. And situationally in the MAC, I have a Kent State team that is off back-to-back losses. Well, those back-to-back losses were on the road. Those back-to-back losses were also at Central Michigan and at Buffalo. you're Kent State, you're 4-1 ATS off a MAC loss. Ohio is off their first win in seven games. They upset BG at home, but now Ohio has to go on the road. They're 1-1 ATS as an away dog. Things return to normalcy tonight as Kent State takes care of Ohio.
Also, who the hell set up the MAC schedule for Kent State to play in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and then roll all the way around the Great Lakes and play at Buffalo? That's a spot I missed. I wish I would have picked up on that one.
Yeah, well, you know, I tweeted out a coach's quote from last night, and it was Montana's head coach, Travis DeCour, and he listened to the spot that Montana was in. Montana, obviously, in first place in the Big Sky. They had to play Montana State, their rival, on Saturday. Then on Monday, 2 days later, one day rest, they're facing Northern Colorado, who is number two in the conference. Northern Colorado had 10 days off prior to facing Montana, while Montana had one day rest. I've never seen a 10-day, one-day rest in college basketball for Northern Colorado pulls the upstate. Montana's head coach said something like, well, maybe we should give them a 30-10 free throw differential as well, just to see if we could fight through that. So he really called out his conference on that and, you know, said, I'm sick and tired of people talking about how Montana gets the advantages and the Grizzlies get all the edges. He goes, the conference screwed us in this conference spot. This was before the game, and it comes to fruition as Northern Colorado pulls the upset. So those things don't happen very much, but when you're playing for a conference title and you're at a 10-1 deficit, and you just faced your rival the day before, tough scheduling spot to be in.
Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, Rolf?
You know what? I'm basically telling people I want you on board right now. What I did is I have a special at Wager Talk. If you go to Wager Talk and you go to the Cal Sports page, my March Madness package starting on March 18th will be $169. Gets you the NCAA tournaments, the NITs, the CBIs, the CITs. You can get the last 20 days for free right now. $169, the rest of college basketball works out to be $4 a day. Every play, plus I have my game of the month going today. That normally a $30 charge. You sign up for that $169 today, you're getting all of my plays today, including that 5%. So if you ever wanted to try me out, I mean, there's been times we've offered $99 for a week. I'm offering $169 for 7 weeks a college basketball service. Why? I think once you're on for a month, I think you'll be on. I think you'll be a long-term customer. You'll read the write-ups that I put. And I think that's all it takes for you and I to have a long-term relationship. So if you ever thought about giving me a try, please do so. I did post some AAF logs. We don't talk about the AAF much, but for those that want to know, a couple 3-0 ATS teams, all four games went under the total. The college basketball guide gets put up every Monday. It's free. And then the NBA daily stat sheet available for free as well, all at wagertalk.com, and then go to the Cal Sports page to either sign up or download any of those free products.
And you can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Good to get you back on the show here, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
There you go. There's Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Definitely a fantastic deal there for the rest of the college basketball season. We'll have another show tomorrow. I'm not sure who's going to be on it. Not sure what my guest lineup's going to look like for tomorrow as of yet. But Thursday, we'll have Brad Powers and Tony George. Friday, Kyle Hunter for our second Handicapping the Hardwood segment. And we'll have a UFC preview with Christian Pina. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.